Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 105 of Season 8 of Movie Around Minute, the Daily Podcast, where we foobar our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me to finish off the week is Duncan Shields of Chronologically Speaking. Exactly. Welcome back to the show. It's the first time in all these seasons that I've gotten that one wrong.
Yeah, that's true, but that is the play on words, so it makes sense that that would slip out.
I understood. Welcome back to the show, and thank you very much for joining me again.
Yeah, I'm happy to be back. It's a good talk going on.
All right, excellent. So, minute 105 begins with Miller and the men starting to strolling through a field, and ends with Miller charging the half track. So basically, we had a nice little musical interlude, you know, a little bit of Duke Ellington, just you know, being crooned by Mellish, who does a nice job of crooning along the way, and you know, they continue walking through this field as this minute begins, and we get a shot of Miller, you know, looking ahead and then looking back and around. He hears something and he's a little confused as to what he's hearing, you know, and he quickly spins around and then he screams, "Half track, cover!" And then all the guys, you know, try and find cover in the middle of this this little field that they're in, which is a very strange place to try to have to find cover in, but, you know.
Yeah, it's like just standing on a prairie, and it's like, dive for cover! Okay. Where?
I mean, again, we both talked yesterday about the fact that that the only botany we know is Botany Bay, but, you know, these flowers are pretty high.
So I think I know what they are. They seem to be, there's some smaller purple ones that I think are thistles, but the tall yellow ones, I think there's maybe some wheat, some wild wheat growing in there, but the tall yellow ones are, it looks like they're rapeseed, a very unfortunately named, but very common rapeseed, where we get rapeseed oil, and they're harvested for their oil, and bees make a nice honey from it, and they're just, you know, as you can see in this field, they don't need much of an excuse to get going. They're everywhere.
Yeah, seriously. And the truth is, you know, they do a nice job of giving cover.
They do. When you've got a field of tall grass or corn or whatever, it's you dive down, it's actually pretty good camouflage. So.
Yeah, and the one of the things, I mean, we keep talking about the amazing cinematography in this movie. But they even film through the flowers, you know, through the rapeseed, that we can see this half track show up in the background, you know, and we see that these men are relatively concealed well, you know, not completely. I wouldn't say it's perfect, but they seem to be concealed quite well with the way that they do it. And we hear this half track, you know, drive by, stuff like that, and then you know, as they're sitting there waiting to find out what's going on with this half track, you know, we see that Miller and his men are getting ready to fight, you know, if they need to, you know, they're all nice and prepared, and then they hear like this big explosion, and we can see it also, the like big plume of dirt, you know, right next to the half track, just you know, shoots up and stuff like that, and then you know, at this point, we have Mike scream, "Who's doing the shooting? Who's doing the shooting?"
Yeah, yeah. I really like the feeling of chaos in this minute.
That's right.
Because, like, let's get prepared to fight these guys, and then it blows up, and you're like, "We didn't do that."
That's right. So who did?
And you're like, conceivably, the person who blew it up is on our side. But what's going on?
I guess it goes with the adage, you know, the enemy of my friend is my the enemy. No, the enemy. Sorry, There you go. See, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. There you go. So I guess they can look at it from that perspective too. And you know, they're really confused as to what's going on. And then the half track continues to move a little more, and then, you know, completely out of nowhere, the front of the half track just bursts into flames, and you know, there's a huge explosion, and we see, you know, flames go all over the place and debris all around and stuff like that, you know, which is not just daunting for the characters, it's also daunting for us because we also don't know where this is all coming from, you know, because they also give us only a brief glimpse of this half track, you know. You know, if you're taking if you're watching this movie the way we are, it's easy to see that these are Germans on the half track. But it's very possible that people that are sitting in the movie theater watching this are not quite paying attention right away to who it is and what it is. You know, yeah. You're not sure if those are Americans or, you know, if those are American troops or German troops that this is happening to.
Yeah.
So I like the ambiguity there that Miller and his men aren't even 100% sure if, you know, if this is the enemy or is someone shooting on the enemy or shooting on friends or whatever it is. You know, they're trying to figure the whole thing out. And then there's all these explosions. And, you know, it's done amazingly. And then they you know, as the half track continues to, continue to move forward, even though it's probably just on inertia or propulsion at that point, because it's it seems to have, you know, it's probably not going to be driving very much after this.
No.
Yeah, that would be my guess.
Yeah.
And then we can see that they look up and they can tell now that it is a German half track.
Yeah.
And there's a bunch of German soldiers on top. And then one of our soldiers, I think it's Jackson, we can't really tell because he's from behind, or maybe it's even Miller, just starts shooting at the soldiers on top. And then a few, there's like three or four soldiers that try to flank them on the side, and they also all get shot immediately by the men of the squad, you know, taking them out. I mean, I was able to count at least seven, maybe even eight soldiers that they shoot there. But because of all the smoke and the rapeseed, it's a little more difficult to tell exactly, you know, how many men they shot. But, you know, they're pretty effective in what they're doing here.
Yeah, and one thing I enjoyed about this movie more than other American movies that I saw, one thing that was really made apparent to me by this film was the wholesale slaughter, and the you know, there's a bit where the wall falls down and they're facing off with each other, you know. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, put the gun down, put the gun down. Yeah. Like, I've seen so many war movies where there's the like cat and mouse, one winner, or there's an ambush and then everybody has a moment to react and get their weapons. Mm-hmm. And then there's a firefight. This movie was like, it's really from the beginning of the beach when the front door of the ship goes down and bullets just pour in. And, you know, 60 to 70% of everybody that was in the boat is dead before they even get off the boat. They're sure. Just they're in a death trap in a funnel for a box. And it's here with they come upon a bunch of soldiers here that are not ready yet. But the Germans get killed by the American troops. You know, the machine gun nest is like they're attacking a fortified position that's aware of their presence. But in this one, the Germans don't even raise their weapons really before they get killed by the American troops. You have to take your opportunities to kill the enemy when they're defenseless, so much the better. And that's not something I've really seen depicted from the American side of things. As well as they do in this movie. This movie was the first time I've seen them kind of just willy-nilly executing Germans while their backs were turned and going, right. Like, sweet, win. Nobody's looking at them like, Oh, that was cowardly of you, Lieutenant Johnson. Like, it's not even mentioned. That's just war. You know, this, and I kind of like that depiction of it was kind of new to me for an American film. And I really like in this scene here, we see all, I became aware watching this scene anyway, of how prevalent the shovels on their backpacks are of all the American troops there. That's, it's hard to tell who's who because they all have the exact same shovel.
That's right.
And I guess a shovel is a very useful tool no matter where you are. Kind of like in the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, they go on about how towels are super useful and how everybody needs a towel and you have to know where your towel is. You know, here it seems like it's more like it's the shovel. If you've got a shovel, you're pretty good. You can dig a hole, dig a foxhole, dig a latrine hole. It can be a weapon. It's a very useful thing for anybody at all times.
Yeah, for sure. Now, what I find very interesting, and you just pointed this out a little bit, is that, you know, the Germans come to their side of the half track. But I didn't think about it till right now. They're being attacked from the other side. So they think that they're going for cover.
Oh, sure.
And in reality, they're going towards Miller and his men, who are not necessarily supposed to be there.
Yeah, they're running. They're running away from where they think the assailants are.
That's right. So I like the way that they do that, and you know, for them, it's a they probably think that they've been ambushed, but they really haven't.
Right.
It's just because of the circumstances of where Miller and his men are that it seems that they're being, you know,
any surviving German would be like, wow, what an excellent classic pincer movement you just pulled off. And they'd be like, yeah, sure. That's what we were doing on purpose.
mm-hmm. We did that on purpose. That's right.
There seems to be so, and then in the next minute, there's a bunch of other Germans that get killed too. And I'm like, can a half track even hold that many Germans? There's like, because yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It looks like there's 7 here, and then it's like
maybe
another.
Maybe also used as a clown car.
Yeah, so it's a clown. It's a German clown car half track apparently. Yeah,
it's possible. And. You know, at this point, Miller then screams, "Get ready to move on their left flank. Take their left flank." And they start advancing towards the half track, and then Mellish goes, "Hold on, and make sure they're down." You know, which it's nice that they're a well-oiled machine. They know how to work together to try to clear the area and make sure that that everyone's able to get away safely.
One of my notes on a lot of these minutes is that, I think it's time to, I have a really hot take here, and my hot take is that Tom Hanks is a good actor. I don't want to freak anybody out. I don't want to go against the grain, but I've always been known for standing up and speaking my mind, and I'm just going to come right out and say it. Tom Hanks is a really good actor. One of the ways...
Especially now that he's a fellow countryman to you, right?
Yes. Yeah. What do you mean? What do you mean?
Well, as of recording, he has stated that that following the inauguration, he's going to be moving to Canada.
No way. Well, there you go.
Since that was 2 months ago, I don't know if he's still in Canada or elsewhere at this point. You know.
Well, there's no shortage of Americans living up here in Canada, so... It's beautiful up here. If any Americans are thinking about coming up here, come on. We'll take it. But one thing I like is how Tom Hanks is so good at just rattling off all this military jargon. You know, like,
Where's it? Get ready to move on the left flank. Take the left flank,
Yeah, he's always, take their left flank, spin around, 220s, get their 88s. Or like when he's looking at the map and he's rattling off all the armaments that the Germans have and all the armaments that they had. and the timing of the attack and how they might have been late and the tactics that they used, but he uses all the sort of shorthand for it. But without being opaque, it's just like, wow. You know, it's like when a server has to take like a long, complicated order. And if they're good at their job, it's not an issue. You know, 10 minutes later, they're like, oh, yeah, this person had, you know, this, this, and this. They didn't want this. They wanted this on the side and the drinks with this and then this with a water back, and they want their appetizers first or whatever. It's kind of like he's just calmly saying there was this many 88s, this many MiGs, this many M33s. We left the Bangalores down there. They got us in this when they came around the side for my 3 o'clock. And he's just, you know, when he's giving orders to everybody, there's no, like, hesitation or confusion. He's just like, you guys go there. You guys go there. And it's all like you really see the machine of their unit working and how responsible he is for how smoothly they do things. And this is definitely one of those moments where they're being ambushed in the middle of a field. And that's a real moment for freezing. That's a real moment for like, okay, we're just hide and see what happens. You know, but once the poop hits the fan blades, he's all right, go there, do this, go there, do this, go there, do this, and just rattling it off. And this, you know, maybe it's because they've done take after take. I don't know, but he really feels like he's living inside of these orders. You know, some people are like, some actors are like, I'm a grizzled military commander, and I'm like, no, you're not. But with Tom Hanks, you know, the way he's rattling off these terms and these instructions, you're like, wow, he's been doing this for years. And it's like, haha, no, he hasn't. He was only acting, you know, and it's very effective.
Yeah, I like the way that they do those things here. Yeah,
yeah.
I think it's partially because they're trying to show us the, you know, how effective a commander he is. You know, that he's the one who's, you know, he's the one who keeps coming up with all these plans of how to deal with things and what to do and stuff like that. And, you know, he was trained well. You know,
What's the bit in the movie where he talks about if you'd studied the field manual? Oh, the sticky bombs?
Yeah, sticky bombs.
Yeah, that's later, but when he's talking about, you know, axle grease, sticky bombs, it's in the field manual, it's on page 38. And I'm like, I'm still kind of like, I don't know if he was just making stuff up, or if it is actually on page 88 of the field manual, and he's a teacher, so he read it.
Right. You know? Well, when I get there, I'll do the research. I haven't done the research yet on those minutes. I couldn't tell you if it really is.
Yeah, he's a good commander because I think he's not just like, I have an idea. He's like, you know, when you're in the middle of a war, there's a lot. I mean, the tactics of warfare can change, which can change things for sure. But the basics of it, like, there's no need to reinvent the wheel. Like, if you, there's a lot of opportunities for a skirmish exactly like that's happening in this minute. That's happened time and time again. You want to call it mounted cavalry, you want to call it a half track, there's you know, things to do immediately, and if you've studied the manual, these are the things that you have to do. So this isn't like Tom Hanks's brilliant maneuver. This is him studying everything that's been done and applying the knowledge of what he studied, as well as using his experience as well, because you don't get too many chances to make mistakes. There's not too many oopsies when you're on the battlefield, you know.
Right, that's true. Wow, that's a great observation. I didn't think about it from that perspective. All right, did you have anything else you want to say about this particular minute?
Nope, that's it. Not much happens, but the battle has been joined. I won't reveal what happens in the next minute, but or the minute after. But the next 5 minutes, pretty exciting. I didn't realize that. Pretty exciting what happens in the next 5 minutes.
All right. Well, you asked for these minutes, so that's why you got them.
That's why I got them. Yeah, but I'm very happy to have gotten these minutes because for me, there's the whole, you know, earn this, music swells, you know, see the old guy in the graveyard, you know, just tell me I've been a good man. Did I do a good life? with his big family and stuff like that. That to me is the Oscar portion of the film. And I think
that can't be the Oscar portion because it's not Tom Hanks.
It's not Tom Hanks. But I guess it's his earned.
I'm thinking it's not Matt Damon either. It's some random actor.
Yeah, it's some guy. And that was another thing that I guess maybe about this movie is there's a speech that he gives when he's talking about a cherished memory of him and his brothers.
Okay, yeah.
Right, you know, and he's like, don't, whatever you do, don't have sex with this ugly girl. Oh my God. And it's this funny, funny story. And I'm like, you and your brothers sound like pretty horrible people. You know, like, and maybe that's kind of the point, you know, but he was kind of relating it like it was here's a very funny everyman story to get the audience to warm up to me. And that had the opposite effect on me. I was like, you saved this.
That's a bad story. As Miller said this week, you know, I don't know who Ryan is. I don't care who Ryan is.
Exactly. Yeah. It doesn't matter.
You know, nobody knew who Matt Damon was, or no one was supposed to know who Matt Damon was at this point.
Oh, but then it happened again in Interstellar. You know, we got to go rescue that scientist. Oh, it's Matt Damon. You know, I think that's happened in 2 or 3 movies now. He's been the surprise reveal.
That's right. All right. Excellent. So every Friday we have a segment called Filmmaker Friday, where my guests will give their top 5 Steven Spielberg directed films. So once again, why don't you start with your number 5 and work your way up?
This was a tough one. He's done a lot of really good movies. I don't want to take a combative stance, a revolutionary stance, but Spielberg's done a lot of good movies. Number 5 would be Jurassic Park. Really enjoyed that. Number 4 would be E.T. That was pretty incredible. Number 3 would be Schindler's List, regardless of the Hollywood, you know, aspects I was talking about earlier. Still a very, very, very moving and effective movie. Number 2 would be Jaws, which I got to revisit. I haven't seen in a very long time, but it's a really, really good movie. And number 1 would be Close Encounters. There's something so, so special about that movie that I think is missed and forgotten, but I had the opportunity to see it somewhat recently, and I was still like, this is just so, so good. Anyway, that would be my top 5.
All right. That is a great list. Thank you very much for that. All right. So, Duncan, would you like for one final time this season and this week to tell people where they can find Duncan Shields?
Eagerly await your, you know, missives and friend requests or whatever, you know, for whatever social media I happen to be on for however long I continue to be on it in these turbulent, chaotic times. But yeah, you can just look for By Duncan Shields across all the platforms that I'm on and you'll find me. And also just Google Chronologically Speaking and all your fine podcast providers will have a good 96 episodes of me talking about Tron with some fantastic people. And also the Time Bandits Minute with my co-host Curtis Blaze. We go into depth on that fine, fine film.
All right. Excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. And if you feel like sending me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So, Duncan, thank you very much for joining me this week.
You're welcome.
I've really enjoyed myself, and I've learned a lot.
Oh, good. It's a good, I was happy to revisit this film. And yeah, it was a joy to talk about it. I was like, when they bring out the wrong Private Ryan, mm-hmm. And it's Captain Tight Pants from Firefly, you know, and I'm like, oh my God, you know, there he is way before he was famous. And I also just wanted to mention, have you brought up the adult film parody of Saving Private Ryan?
It has been brought up, but feel free to
okay, check. It has been brought up. But I used to work in a video store, and we always joked that that was the top of the line parody of shaving Ryan's privates was the best porn parody title that we had all heard. It got the gold star for that one.
All right, hey, if it gets a gold star in Canada, you know.
Yeah.
All right, excellent. So I will be back on Monday with a new guest. But until then, everyone have a great weekend and earn this.
In my solitude.